you know, we've got numbers to hit, and it's not so much because we want to make a crap ton of profit. It's because we want to keep the lights on, right? Yeah. I mean, we see the industry. We see how many hundreds of schools have closed even pre-COVID, and now as we're coming out of it, there's the list of schools that aren't reopening because of it.
You are listening to the Higher Ed Podcast. We uncover the future of higher education, current trends, insights from the sector's brightest, and actionable advice for leaders and executives. Creating impactful universities, well-branded colleges, and best-in-class student experiences. Join us as we redefine the sector one episode at a time.
So listeners, we got a great guest for you today, a friend, colleague, maybe borderline mentor as well. You know, I'd say we, probably a quid pro quo from time to time. Dustin Hall is with us on the Higher Ed Podcast. Dustin, you want to introduce yourself to our audience, please?
Absolutely. Well, Kamar, George, thanks for taking time to have me on today. I've been a higher ed vet for this is going to be my 22nd year. I've done it. I started in marketing at a private college and moved on from that to dean of housing at two other colleges. And I finally found myself at admissions about around 2006. And that's sort of where my career in admissions have gone from, director of enrollment management to admissions leaders and things like that. But I think the most important part is just being a team leader and somebody that's really thoughtful with the team. And that's something I sort of have built my whole the last half of my career on, is that servant leadership to my teams, the ones that I work with. So I'm super excited to be on here with you and to share a little bit of that knowledge. And you had some kind words, Kamar. I definitely I think you were more of the mentor to me. I can count just a handful of places that I've been in my career where I felt a real impact and connection, and I think some of that connection is the fact that I know that you have a servant's heart as well. And I think when you have a heart to serve people, man, the teams just they just come around. So I'm really excited to be here. Thanks.
Absolutely, and we're excited to have you. So before we kind of get really into it, one of the questions I've always wanted to ask you and can't believe I haven't: are you more passionate about adult admissions or high school admissions?
I think, currently I'm in high school admissions. I've been in adult admissions. I've been in transfer admissions, which, is a huge, that's almost a beast of its own. So right now I'd say high school admissions, because that's where my current, I'm an associate director of admissions of a high school team. Currently. So that's where I'd say my passion currently lies.
Gotcha. All right. And you've always, servant leadership, thoughtful leadership has always kind of been, your brand, your staple, right? How challenging has that been during the COVID era, or, how important has that been to actually thriving and succeeding during the COVID era?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I keep telling everybody and my team that we're living in one of the most interesting times of our lives, and it's something where flexibility is really important. And I mean flexibility on the manager side too. Obviously you want to have it from your team, but you need to have that flexibility. I mean, you've got people working from home that have never worked remotely before. You've got employees that not only are they working at home, but now they're, full-time teacher to their kids. And, they have all these other things that are impactful in their lives. And I think it's very easy for us as organizations to take a look at it from the numbers standpoint, where we're like, oh my gosh, we still have metrics to hit. We still have conversions to hit. And we have to keep an eye on that. But I think sometimes we get lost in that, and we have to realize we're in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, we're going to get through it. We're all going to get through it. But you have to think of your people as people. They've got their own things in their lives going on. They might have, we all have young kids, and they might have young kids. I know what it was like having my son home during the first lockdown. And I love my son, love him to death. But man, I am not built to be a stay-at-home parent. I'm not. So, you know, we definitely don't pay teachers enough and preschool to handle what I had to handle during that time. But I know if it was hard for me, imagine my team where, you know, we're like, hey, we want 100 calls a day and doing student interviews and enrollments. And that personal part of it is you need to remember that they're people and they're taking this harder too, because, you know, they have the same doubts. You know, they see colleges closing. They see restaurants closing. I mean, if restaurants can close, colleges can close. And so they're worried about losing their job. They're worried about, you know, I've got kids at home. Maybe their spouse, you know, might work. I know, Kumar, you mentioned that your fiance is in the medical field. You know, I've got somebody on my team that their husband is in the medical field. And that's a stressor, too, because you're like, all right, well, you know, what could possibly come home to my family? So I think this time we really need to be thoughtful in how we lead our teams to let them know that it is people first. And I took a very flexible standpoint with my team and said, hey, you know, whenever you need to work, do it. You're at home. I'll see it on the back end if you're doing it or not. And I think they really appreciated that because they said, all right, you know, I don't have to be there at a certain time. I know that, you know, I can get my calls. I can make it work into my life. And, you know, a lot of my team was remote before this, but those added stresses, like myself, I'm a remote person, but the added stress of having, you know, my spouse and my son at home, I knew it was hard on me. So for those that are really frontline, you know, it's a lot harder. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because, you know, my fiance being a nurse, she was definitely was and is more essential than I am. Right. And, right. You know, so I had the kids, right? We've got twin boys, they're 7, and then a little girl that's, you know, about 18, 19 months at the time. And literally, like, the boys were easy, but I'm like, by 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm done. Like, I need the day to be over. Right. You know, can I get a Suburban? You know, and I'm like, man, this is mentally, emotionally, like everything you could name, you know, draining. It was the first time I've ever done anything like that. So definitely your level of empathy rises, right? Because now, you know, employees that you have that are in similar situations that have been dealing with it for so long, now all of a sudden you get exposed to it and you're like, this is it's only 9:45. Are you serious?
Right.
And I still got a whole day of work left. So I definitely get that. I can relate. George is chomping at the bit. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, like, so my wife and I have a 18-month-old toddler and a 3-week-old. And I have to say, the daycares, luckily, in the state of Georgia are open again. But, you know, you think, oh, the work week is bad, weekends are good. When you have a toddler and the daycare, like, and a 3-week-old, when there's no daycare on the weekends, it's like the worst. Like I would work 24/7, 365 as long as the daycare is open. Just because, like, you know, it's just impossible, you know, even if there's Absolutely. Even if there's two parents, it's just, it's very, very stressful.
Absolutely. I had one of my colleagues, she had said, cause you know, daycares were closed down here and they were closed down where she was at. And she knew like that particular Monday that they were opening, she's like, I'm gonna be there at 6:45 with like a fistful of cash and just like not even slow down, just throw them cash, throw my kids and roll, because she was at that point too, you know.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, it's tough. So one of the things I've always heard you talk about, especially dealing with leadership, right, is we develop people that we work with to elevate in their career, was, you know, understanding your position versus your role as a manager. Could you just unpack that a bit for our audience?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of times we have two different types of managers, unfortunately, in most organizations. You have the ones that are there for the title, and you have the ones that are there for the role. And if somebody would ask me, you know, what's your title? And this particular instance, I'm associate director of regional high school admissions. But when people ask me what I do, my response is typically along the lines of, I support an amazing team of 14 people that change lives. And they sometimes get this puzzled look and they're like, no, I mean, like, what do you do? And I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. I support this team. And I think that's the important mindset to have. I mean, titles are fine. And whether you're a campus president, a divisional VP, whatever it is, titles are fine. But it's that whole part that you're there to support people. And as a leader, that's one of your main things is support. You know, a lot of times we've seen the triangles where, you know, you have the leader on top and then all the people underneath. And it's really flip-flop, you know, because at the end of the day, I'm tired. I am beat. And it's funny because, you know, at the end of the day, my wife and I have a routine where she gets home from work. You know, we have dinner with our son, we put him to bed, and then I'll pour a bourbon or crack a beer. And then we talk about our day. And one of the things that I thought was interesting that even during this time, you know, she said something the other week to me because she's switching careers right now. And she said, I want to have a career like you do because you talk about your day and you're like, oh, you know, I talked to this person and then we role played this or I coached them on this. And, you know, I'm just excited because I think they're getting this concept. And she goes, at the end of the day, you are so like beat and drained from pouring into people. And then you followed up with, but you know what? I can't wait to do it again tomorrow. And she was like, and that's what I want. And I, as a leader, that's how you have to be. You have to pour into your people, even if at the end of the day you're drained, but you're excited to come back to it the next day. I mean, there are some days that it's rougher in the trenches than others, but you know, that excitement and that drive to just pour into your people, I think is so important. And in this time, especially, you know, in times of crisis, we have to pour into those people and talk to them about what's going on in their lives and, you know, get a better understanding for them. So I think that's when we talk about understanding your role versus your position, is that people differentiate that. Because there's a lot of times that people, you know, and we've seen it in admissions, you know, people will come up through admissions and they want to be a manager. They're like, oh, I want to be a manager. I want to have a title. I want to have the paycheck. Right. And they might not be successful at it because they know how to recruit students. Right. They know how to do well. And sometimes we see that in regular sales. You promote your best salesperson manager. And unfortunately, you lost your best salesperson and you didn't gain that great a manager, you know, because they don't know how to pour into people. So a lot of it is, you know, developing people that if they want to be managers, even to develop that heart of a servant that pours into people.
Yeah, I know one of my mentors would always tell me that, you know, the best enroller, you know, your strongest admissions person, especially, you know, when you dig into the numbers, you know, may not be the best director of admissions, right? May not be the best sales manager, right? And I took that personally for a long time in my career until I really started to understand that, you know, like you said, the nurturing that you have to do, you know, with, you know, your reps, your admissions representatives, you do have to pour so much of yourself into them that if you're still looking for that instant gratification, you'll struggle because you're not going to get it. You have to be more willing to see your team get that gratification, see your team get the rewards, see your team get the shine, get the nourishment. And, you know, you don't win really until the team, you know, collectively wins. And when you're looking at 14 people, it's a lot different than just one. So that's an excellent point. George, looks like you're chomping at the bit if you want to add something.
No, I'm just going to say it's something that always hits home is, you know, you promote your best widget builder. And they're not always a great manager of widget builders and you lose a great widget builder. And so, you know, part of that is what I always like to tell people is if you have that, you know, that great salesperson or that great rep, you know, engage with them early and often. Is the career path important to them? Is that a place they want to go? And if yes, just have the conversation, right? And the earlier you do that, the more runway you give them to build the skill sets you need them to build. so that, because, you know, you don't want to get in that awkward moment where they realize they want to be promoted and they come to you proactively, like, where's my promotion? Because at that point, they're checked out if you say no, and there's no time for you to build the skills that you know that they're going to need to get to the manager level. So you have to kind of identify them early and have the conversation with them if it's something they want, and you know, start building those skills before it gets to the point where they're kind of like, promote me or I'm going to go get a promotion somewhere else type of thing.
George, I think that's fantastic. I mean, I think you hit it right, like the nail on the head, and it reminded me of two things that if we look early in the process, when we look at hiring and who we bring on, and, you know, if you have a lot of turnover on your team, it's one thing to look at the manager as well, because, you know, turnover is what kills goals. You know, whether you're a sales team of any type, whether it's a higher ed or widget building, if you have team turnover, it's gonna kill those goals. And so, two things there. The first one is every person I hire, I have a conversation with them, and I said, listen, I would love for you to be here 10 plus years to make your career here, but I'm also realistic. I know that I've got maybe 3 to 5 good years out of you. What do you want to do at the end of that? What can I do to build you up to where you want to be? And I think by having that honest conversation where I'm like, hey, I know this might not be your final spot, but I want to make the next several years impactful for you. And what happens at the end of that 5 years? Some of those people are going to stick around because, you know, you've made such an impact on them. And some of them, if there's not the opportunity for growth, you know, maybe you're fully staffed and there's not that opportunity to build up, you know, I tell them, hey, I'll write you a recommendation for the next place if it gets you to where you want to be in your career. And then the second point I had on that is I had a mentor a long time ago that said that when it comes to teams, it comes down to two things of why you lose people. You only lose people on your team for two reasons, commitment or competency. And for me, I only want to lose people for the commitment part. You know, if something comes along and you know, somebody throws 40,000 more at them and that's why they want to leave, I get that. But when it comes to competency, I want to make sure that I'm training you up, I'm coaching you up, I'm building you up every day so that you are as competent as you can be in your career, so that so it sort of builds that that confidence to stick around for a long time. And I've been very blessed that, you know, with the team that I get to serve right now, our turnover is very low. So I'm just very really blessed by the group of people I have right now.
This episode of the Higher Ed Podcast is brought to you in part by Engine Systems, an active performance and growth management company for the higher ed space. Engine Systems provides extraordinary insight, develops data-driven strategies, and works in conjunction with your institution to bring about the results and outcomes you need to expand your mission to more and more students. Engine Systems focuses in 5 distinct verticals: admissions training, CRM implementation and utilization, media management, call center operations, and active performance and growth management, which covers everything from staffing to budgeting. To learn more about Engine Systems and schedule a free discovery call, please visit our website at engine.systems.
I think it's a great point, especially the first one you made, you know, like, transparency and being genuine with the talent when you identify is critical. Like, one of the things that I have noticed between the great managers and the good managers is, you know, sit down with that talented individual and straight up tell them, look, like, I want you to leave, right? I want you to develop here to the point where you're so marketable that you can go get a job elsewhere and I can't match it. And if I can create the infrastructure here at this company to match it and put you in that role, I will do everything in my power to do so. But if, you know, I almost want you to leave, right? Because it shows good about our team, our culture, the leadership, if we're developing people to the point where they're so marketable and have developed such skills that they leave. And there's a lot of the good managers, insecure managers, you know, we can get into the psychology of it, but a lot of managers kind of don't want to do that because they're afraid of the turnover, right? And they assume, hey, if I develop this person, there it's going to be easier for them to leave, which on the surface is true. But the flip side is there's very few managers out there that are going to take the time to develop and be genuine and be that transparent. And so a lot of the times the fear is misplaced, because even if you develop them to the point where they can leave, a lot of the times they will want to stay with you. And to your point, their commitment to you and to the organization will be stronger because you just had the straight up conversation with them, right? And the smart ones know you're trying to keep them, you know, like they're not stupid. And so it's actually to your disadvantage to not just be transparent with them about what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody wants to be a part of something, right? I mean, I'm a Penn State graduate. And when I was in Columbus, you know, I came this close to going to Ohio State for my master's, which would be blasphemy, right? But you get caught up in that city, right? You get caught up on it with the energy, especially, you know, Saturday's game day. And it's like, man, you know, I even want to be a part of this, right? And, yeah. You know, so what I've always done is, you know, to both of your points, right, create that culture, right, that people feel like they're a part of something, right, and they want to win, right? They want to, you know, pursue their goals. The team goals become their goals, right? And then you also want to develop them individually. And I always, you know, was like, I want to make sure that not just a little bit of money will make you go somewhere else, right? It's going to be significant. And you're still going to teeter so much because you still want to stay, you know, in this culture. But I've always said we've got a team full of directors and we're always working towards that. So I didn't necessarily say I want you to leave, but it was quite similar to yours, George, and saying if someone comes to you with an amount of money that we can't match, then we're excited about it. Like we've fulfilled the goal of helping you to provide, you know, for yourself and your family and grow in your career. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's why, you know, I've stayed in contact with you, Dustin, and so many people that I've worked with, you know, to this day, because you know, they still reach out for tips. You know, mm-hmm. I may reach out for tips, right? And it's like if the relationship was so genuine and transparent that it supersedes, you know, and transcends just, you know, the work environment. So I agree with you guys 100% on that one. I'm not sure if George was going to say something, but if he wasn't, one of the questions I had here was, how do you balance, especially, you know, as we're in the middle of a pandemic, being empathetic, but still supporting and developing your team so that they can, you know, service, you know, your potential students? I mean, that's got to be a heck of a juggling act.
You know, it really is, because when it comes down to it, again, you want to have that empathy type thing, because if you don't have that empathy too, you know, we talk about like trickle down. I forget what the old saying is, but you can smell a salesman that's way off his goal, like a mile away. Right. So it's something it's true, you know, because it's coming up on the end of the month and they're, you know, below goal and they're worried about it. And what happens is we have that saying because you can tell when you're getting sold in somebody that they don't have a genuine interest in what they're trying to sell you. They're just trying to make their number. And I think during this time, I mean, we're in a pandemic, you know, so we have to have that empathy with our people. And we all know the goals are still there. And we, you know, we talk about the numbers. But I know for my folks, you know, I'm a guy that I'm 25% numbers, 75% about them. I mean, and by keeping it about them, they know the numbers are there. We talk about it. We talk about, you know, conversions and such. But I don't make them feel like, hey, you know, not only are you in a pandemic where you're teaching your kids, you're cooking all these meals, you're, you know, worried about your health and so forth. But on top of that, I'm going to beat you down so that you have to worry about your job as well. You know, that's not me. So I think having that empathy and, you know, allowing them to be real people, it allows them to then trickle down to the students that they're talking to, the parents that they're talking to. And still have those genuine conversations that they would have if they weren't having that extra stress over their shoulder. So I think that's part of that balancing act is, you know, we've got numbers to hit, and it's not so much because we want to make a crap ton of profit. It's because we want to keep the lights on, right? I mean, we see the industry, we see how many hundreds of schools have closed even pre-COVID. And now, as we're coming out of it, there's the list of schools that aren't reopening because of it. So I think, you know, having that type of urgency where we're like, hey, right now, every school, and I don't care how big the school is, if you have, you know, 3,400 students or if you have 40,000 students, every school is sort of in a survival mode right now, you know, because they don't know what's going to be coming down the pike. So I think, you know, by having that empathy with your staff, it's going to trickle down. And, you know, and that's what people want. People want real conversations right now. You know, I'll have my staff have asked about, you know, what are the COVID plans? You know, I have parents asking me about that. And we know what it is. In general, it changes every week. You know, I can tell you something this week. And what I told them is I said, just have honest conversations with these parents. And first off, identify that I know that you're scared. I'm scared too. But here's what we're doing to try and mitigate some of that. And ours updates every week. So it's something where I'm like, you know, just make sure that you read it at the top of the week. And if parents ask you about it, because it goes back, you know, when parents send their kids away to school 10 years ago, pre-COVID, safety was one of their number one concerns. That hasn't changed. Now the safety is different though. You know, at least in those times you could worry about, like, you know, creepy people. Now it's something that we can't see, right? And they want to know that part of the safety. So I think, again, it just goes back to that empathy, that thoughtfulness that you instill in your staff, and it trickles down to the prospects.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest kind of challenges with the entry-level managers, right? The people that are used to the, like, being on the receiving end of the performance conversations, a lot of the times it's difficult for them to shift the conversation to a more empathetic, how are you doing, versus looking at the numbers, right? Their natural instinct is to sit down, look at the numbers, okay, these various KPIs should be here and they're here, let's talk about it. And they don't realize that most of the time, you know, it's personal issues with the employee that are being reflected in the numbers, and the conversation isn't about the numbers. And it takes a lot of training and investment in those early managers, and especially, you know, not necessarily in COVID when we're just trying to survive, but when we're in growth mode, right? When COVID ends, however it ends, there's a vaccine, whatever, the schools that are still there are going to go into mass growth mode, and they're going to be just mass promoting their A players into these management roles. And if they do that without the proper training and oversight to provide the empathy, you know, it's they're not going to get the effects that they want, right? Because I've found the biggest thing that separates the more experienced managers from the junior ones, one of the things is certainly how they have the performance conversations. And you can still call it a performance conversation even if you're not talking about their performance, right?
Absolutely. And you know, I guess an example of that. So if we even look, so where I'm at, we're on a quarter system. So we do starts every quarter. And again, I don't preach numbers hard. And our start in June, we ended up about 20 over where we were supposed to be. I mean, we blew last year out of the water, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. And it's all these, like I said, I keep saying I'm blessed by my people because they are fantastic to serve. And by having that relationship, and I agree with what you said, George, there's a handful of them that, you know, I would love if we can get to that point where everything's like that huge growth mode again. I've got a handful of them that I'd love to move on to the next level because they're just good people that they get it, you know, and that's what you need. You need people that get it.
Yeah. Dustin, have you made any changes to your one-on-one cadence or structure or weekly team meetings cadence or structure kind of during the pandemic?
I wouldn't say any huge changes, only because, again, my team is mostly remote. So so Zoom was something that we used for the last couple of years. Gotcha. So it's something that we were already on top of. Now, the one thing that was funny is, because it was my team that used it and no one else in the university, when everything shut down and everybody had to go home, it was like 2 hours a day out of all my people's day was, hey, this department needs a little tutorial on Zoom. Would you mind? So that was a little bit different. We suddenly became like tech support. But overall, I mean, you know, all of my people know that they have an hour, a designated hour of time from me that is on the calendar. We're on it. If it takes 20 minutes, cool. If it takes an hour and 10 minutes, cool. And then I've got basically two sub teams. So I do a hour call with each of the sub teams. So right there, I mean, that chews up about 18 hours of the week. And that's before I get the random calls on issues and things like that. But that was something that, you know, I think is very important. And it's very important that as a manager, your day gets busy. And we know what it's like a lot of times. I know my Mondays, I don't have anything scheduled on Mondays because Mondays are typically dumpster fire days, right? I mean, you come in and you're like, oh man, what blew up? Okay, perfect. So, I mean, but you can't cancel those one-on-ones. You have to stay consistent with those. You can move them if you need to later in the day, which I have to do from time to time. But for the most part, the people appreciate that you're giving them time where, you know, I put my phone down. It's sort of like, you know, when you're trying to be attentive with a spouse or a child, you know, and you're like, all right, I need to put my phone down. I need to just focus. And, you know, something at an organization I was at years ago, that is one of those ones that's no longer around. We had something that's called Be Here Now. It was a little placard that we kept on our desk. And if an employee thought that you weren't actually listening to them, you were just being like, uh-huh, they could flip that placard around at any point to bring you back down to earth. Mm-hmm. And so it's so important to have those one-on-ones, especially in this pandemic. And my one-on-ones typically sound like this. I'm like, hey, Kumar, what's up, man? What's going on this week with you? Like, and when I say what's going on this week with you, I don't care about like work. I'm like, what's going on? You know, how is vacation? You know, how are the kids? You know, that's the type of conversation. I know all my, you know, my team, I know what their kids' names are, what they're into. And it's because I enjoy hearing about that. It's not because I want to check that box, but it's because I want to see what's going on in their lives. And then at the end of it, I'm like, all right, you know, so what do we have work-wise? Well, how can I help? What do you need from me? And I think that's important as a manager, whether it's COVID or not, is to ask, what do you need from me? Because it's intimidating sometimes for especially newer employees. You know, they get in there, they get a week of training at most places. They have a binder this thick. You know, they might have shadowed somebody for a little bit, but they're intimidated to ask. You know? So that's why I put it out there. I'm like, what do you need from me? How can I help? There's no dumb questions. And here in COVID, it's been very similar to that.
Yeah, yeah. And everything's important, right? I remember one time I was leading a team and I had a rep and she was a big fan of this game called World of Warcraft, right? And I'm not into video games, right? But to your point, right, you know, not having a conversation all about the numbers and really just genuinely learning about the person, right? She plays World of Warcraft all day long, right? And she explains to me that it's a never-ending game, right? And I can't fathom the concept. I'm like, well, why would you play the game that has no end? Like, to me, this makes, you know, no sense. You know, so she's right, telling me about the characters and the fact that she plays it all the time. And this was one of those people that most, you know, admissions directors or operations people would say, probably not fit for admissions, you know, probably more administrative or financial aid, right? And the campus director said, how the heck did you get this person to change 5 or 6 lives a week? And I said, World of Warcraft, right? And she was like, what the heck is that? But when I was able to start to talk to her on that level, and talk to her about the characters, you know, it was this one particular character on there that nobody would ever use. And whenever she was having a rough day or a slow day, I would say she was emulating that character. And when I tell you it motivated her to the highest level, like I still don't believe it. But it's one of those points when you're saying that everything counts, right? And a lot of times what people don't understand is in admissions or sales positions, the only people that really care about the numbers specifically is the managers and all the way up. Mm-hmm. Most reps are like, I just got to make more calls. I just got to get more referrals. Like, they're more into what they have to do. And they feel like as long as they do what they're supposed to do, for the most part, they'll be successful. So a lot of times, to your point, it's how do I get that commitment, right? Especially from someone that I know already has the confidence, right?
Right.
But that, if you don't take the time to understand those things or learn those things or know those things, you'll never be able to, you know, initiate or raise commitment in certain individuals at certain times, because there's so many things that could bring that down. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, like speaking of the numbers, right, it's good from a management standpoint, but that's what you need them to carry into their conversation with the prospects if you really want to get your numbers up, right? Because we're seeing a big shift from more transactional conversations. Hey, this is my school. This is my value prop. You know, here's my placement rate. Here's the average, blah, blah, blah. Here's why you should come. You want it or not? And that used to work. And now there's a lot more uncertainty and people are looking for much more emotional connection, right? And they're going to make a decision about your school, not based on the transactional value props, but about the how you connect with them emotionally about what they're going through. And the reps that are able to do that well are going to be your best performing reps anyway, but it's magnified, right, during COVID. And so if you don't, as a manager, connect with them on that level and show them, they're the chances of them doing that with their prospects is going to be very low.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with that.
This episode is brought to you in part by Chief Digital Marketers, the leading marketing agency for higher education and healthcare companies. Chief Digital Marketers ensures alignment between your marketing strategy, customer journey, and call center operations to guarantee qualified leads that turn into revenue at scale. To learn more or to get an audit of your current marketing initiatives, please visit chiefdigitalmarketers.com.
Yeah. So, and I know this is your favorite topic, so I saved this, you know, for last. You know, can you share with our audience, you know, your philosophy on A, B, and C players and how they all fit into the admissions team puzzle, especially with 14, 15, 30, you know, agents or admissions representatives?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we all know who our A players are, right? Those are the ones that, that's like a, I want to say it's almost like the set and forget. You know that they're doing their job, they're getting the numbers. You check in with them, you support them, and you know what you're getting from them. And sometimes you have, so let's say your goal's 50, you know that they're gonna come in at 60 every time. But you know, the B players, I think, is where the opportunity's at, and especially, you know, for those of us that we've been in this game a long time. We've been in the organizations where it was burn and churn. You know, you could have somebody that they did great for, you know, 2 years, but then they had an off quarter and then they're like, sorry, Charlie, you gone. You know, a lot of schools, I think, have sort of scaled back from that a little bit. And it's important to have those other players. You know, your B players are the ones that, all right, so let's say their goal is 35, but you know consistently they'll get you at least 28, right? And they bring a lot of other stuff to the table. You know, in earlier types of times, we would be like, yeah, still you're missing goal by 7. Yeah, it's sorry. Yeah. And unfortunately, this day and age, we can't do that anymore. It's something where I look at upside all the time, where if I've got a person that I know they're gonna miss their mark by 7, but man, their upside, you know, they bring this, and this. Let's say they're social media people, or, you know, they know how to do events and things like that. If I know that I've got them, I'm like, do I really want to cut them for somebody new where it's an unknown? So I think on those types of people too, is continue to encourage them, let them know that, you know, you want them to meet and exceed expectations, But I think playing on the things that they're good at, I think it's really helpful as well. And that's something, you know, sort of like you're a World of Warcraft person where, you know, you got interested in what they were interested in. You know, we have a lot of people that get into admissions and they get into it. They read the job description. They go through multiple interviews. And by day seven, they're like, oh, yeah, this, I don't think this is what I thought it was going to be. And you're like, what? How did this happen? And it happens to all of us as managers. And you're like, what? And I think at that point, too, you know, as a manager, you step back and you're like, all right, there was something in this interview. There was stuff in the interviews. And we go, for us, we go through multiple, like 5-6 interviews now because we want to make sure that we're getting the right people. But at that point, you're like, all right, there was something about them. What are the things that they're really good at that can complement what we need? And then we try and train them and build them up on the admissions side. So again, your A players, that's what you need to keep the enrollments up. And a lot of times those are your players that really have that empathetic side, sort of like what George was talking about, where, you know, they're not so much about transactional, but they're about the relationship building that's going to get those students in there. And then, you know, your B players, they're going to hit close. Sometimes they might hit over, sometimes they might hit a little under, but they have a lot of upside. And when you talk about your C players are the ones that typically those are your new ones, and they're going to go one of two places. You're either going to build them up into a B player and A player. I've got one right now that I keep telling her. I'm like, you're going to be an A player. I mean, I can just see it from her work ethic, the way she makes the calls, the way she builds relationships. And you're going to have other ones early on that, you know, your C players where you work with them, you need a knee, you're coaching them, and they're just not going to get it. And at that point, as a good manager, it's important to have transparent conversations that, hey, you know, this isn't working out. And sometimes, you know, we have a lot of schools have performance plans, you know, that they might put faculty or admissions on, you know, hey, you're not hitting this benchmark. If you're a manager and you give one of those performance plans to a person and it looks like you just walked over their grave, you haven't been doing your job right, because they should be looking at you like, "Woo! I was wondering when this was coming. I knew it was coming," but yeah,
absolutely.
Because you're having those transparent conversations, and they don't need to be mean or hard conversations. You know, you're working with them and coaching them, but that's what happens with your C player. They either coach them up or you coach them out. So that they can move into another role that's maybe, you know, more suited for them. So again, it just goes back to, again, thoughtfulness, transparency, and then that ends up with the students. And a quick, something that George, that you had said there that I thought was interesting about, moving from transactional to more of the, relationship building when it comes with decision making. You know, something else that I've seen this year in the industry as a whole, and I think it kind of reflects on where society is going right now. I had this conversation with my wife last night especially all of us that have young kids, is, you know, sometimes parents are like, oh, you know, what's the world going to be like, you know, for my kid when they get older? What world am I leaving to them? And one of the things that I think I've seen over the last 3 years, even pre-COVID, is we've lost the ability to disagree with each other civilly. You know, I feel like there's this divisive divide where you either have to be this side of the coin or this side of the coin. And if you're on the other side, you're completely wrong. And I think that we're seeing that sometimes with even college searches. You know, it used to be that, you build that relationship and 70% of what this school has to offer is exactly what is good enough for me. It might not have this or this, but that's all right. But as a society, we've moved to where everything is so singularly based, where if you don't agree with me, you're wrong. That we have some students that are coming into organizations and into universities that, if we're not hitting all 10 of those check boxes, they're not doing it. And I think that goes back to that relationship building that you're talking about, that I think that if you can have those conversations with students and build those relationships and sort of, see what side they're coming from, and help coach them on, hey, you know, there's going to be a lot of schools out there, but I can guarantee that there's not going to be one that's 100% perfect. I think that's just going to help society as a whole. It was sort of a little side tangent based off of the what you said about relationship building. But, you know, I think it's up to us as professionals in higher education to help keep those lines of communication open for the kids that are coming up that, you know, can sort of see all angles.
Yeah, and it's hard to have that conversation with the prospects about, it doesn't have this, but it's still good, if you don't have the relationship, right? If you don't establish the relationship, why are they going to care? Like, they're not looking to you as someone that's helping them make a decision, right? And so whatever the obstacles are, like, there's no way you're going to get over them unless you establish the relationship first.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so what are the top two, you know, maybe three challenges you faced, you know, with your team during the pandemic?
I think for some, I think one of the biggest challenges that I think a lot of organizations and myself dealt with is you have people that aren't used to being remote employees. And, you know, now you've put them at home, you've given them a laptop, and you're like, hey, you know, I still want you to make 100 calls or do this or do that. And that's a huge challenge because you know, as managers, we can check what's going on. We can check the activity, you know, based on our CRMs. And I'm like, hey, I know I give you a lot of flexibility, but it's, you know, already 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I haven't seen any dials. Like, what's going on? I was talking to a buddy that's at another college, and he was talking about one of his challenges. He said, yeah, I don't know how to have the conversation with my one admissions rep because we've Zoomed every day this week, and I'm pretty sure she's worn the same exact shirt every single day this week. He's like, so I'm not sure how to have that conversation. Like, so I think that's a big thing that, you know, that people are just struggling with it. Right. And I think that, and going back to the empathy piece, is I think you know, we look at mental health right now. Mental health is way up because people are way down. And I think being able to have those conversations, and, you know, I was constantly, when this first happened and we sent our team out, I was like, hey, here's the EAP that we have for if you're having any sort of issues, you know, having everybody at home and you want to talk to somebody, it's part of our benefits. I'm like, get them on the phone, you know, talk to somebody, you know, before it gets out of control. And I think that was something that was a positive for them because some of them didn't even know we had that service, but it was something like, oh, you know, my boss cares enough that, you know, they don't want me to kill my spouse. That's cool. All right. You know? So I think, the mental health challenge, was a big one. I think those are probably my two biggest was mental health and then having people that, have no business working remotely, trying to, you know, keep them motivated. I've got a bunch of people now that campuses are opening that are like, I cannot wait to go back to work on campus because I cannot work from home.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are struggling with working remote now is not working remote 8 months ago, right? Like, there's a huge difference between working remote when my kids are at school or my kids are at daycare and my spouse is at work and working at home right now when the schools are closed or the daycares are closed or the spouse is also trying to work remote. I mean, you know, I remember an example vividly, had a client and one of the call center reps literally sent a picture. So we ran out of laptops. So everyone had to take their desktops home because, you know, everyone was trying to order laptops. And where are all the laptops made? China. So there's no laptops to be bought. So they sent everyone home with their desktop computers. And this employee literally had the desktop computer set up on her family's dining room table and was trying to work in that environment while kids were home, not in school, and had a spouse or had another family member that was in the home that they were taking care of, whatever. And it's like, when you visualize that, like, how do you as a manager sit down in front of that person and start talking about them missing their goals by 15%. Like, it just the fact of even addressing that is like, are you even remotely in tune with what this person's going through? Now, if it was remote 8 months ago and they're alone and the only difference is they're sitting at home versus they're sitting in your corporate office, obviously that's a lot different. But people don't realize the extent, right? And especially the managers, the higher level managers, there's less chance that they have all the distractions. Just because of where they are in their life, there's just a better chance they have more room in their house. They have extra care for their kids. They just have a whole bunch of other things. It's hard for them to relate to, I'm sitting at a dining room table in my apartment trying to do this job, right? And so people have to realize that remote now is not what it usually is, and the expectations as you as a manager have to change.
Yeah, absolutely, Dustin. And I think that goes back to your point earlier, right? Understanding your position versus your role and that empathy, right? So if you've, you know, put that investment in, right, with the empathy and built the relationship and transparency, right? I think in a world like the quote Seth Godin with so much noise, and or in a house with so much noise and a world with so much noise, right, that rep is probably a lot more likely to tune in, right, give you the benefit of the doubt or give you an ear at all in that situation when you've invested, right? And they feel like you're genuine, feel like there's sincerity, you've been transparent, you have a relationship to this, you know, transactional, tactical person that's literally talking to me about numbers while I got one child that I'm feeding oatmeal and another one that's running all over the place. Get out of here, right? Like, it's going to be a totally different way that the person will even be open to receiving this if you haven't done that, right?
I had a QA manager come to me. Hey, these couple reps, they have a lot of background noise on their calls, and I'm going to ding them on their quality score. I was like, first of all, just go back in time to where you didn't say that. And second of all, let's go get some training for our team about how to have the conversation with the folks and tell the prospect on the phone up front, hey, just so you know, this is my situation. There might be some interruptions. Is that okay with you? Sure it is. No problem. But the most people's first reaction is performance management and not empathy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that might be a great note to end it on, actually.
Thanks for listening to the Higher Ed Podcast. This episode was brought to you in part by Engine Systems and Chief Digital Marketers. For more information on topics discussed, you can visit engine.systems or chiefdigitalmarketers.com. Join us next week and every week after for more innovative and actionable advice.